veiling is the most biblical? Do we need a Bible passage and verse for every practical application standard in the book? We also had a few lessons on the return of Christ, and we studied the Christian virtues. That was an all-around good study. The next class of the day was called Modern Religious Voices, taught by Stuart Bauman. I think Rhoda has more on that. After lunch, my first class was called Becoming Fishers of Men. Stuart did good at making that practical, and a few of us made good use of those tips before the end of the term. The last class period of the day, I took Getting Along with People God's Way. Dale Whitmer taught that class and did good at keeping most of us awake. What is the most important Christian virtue for successful relationships? Where does the plan for human relationships originate? On the second Saturday of the term, the students and some of the staff loaded up on the bus, and we went to Louisiana for a work project. We parked at a church in the village of Tangibahoa. It's a very poor, very small town that had been hit by a tornado several weeks earlier. We were split up in five or six groups, and my group started out by walking the streets and picking up trash in some yards, and then went and helped another group who were cutting up a tree that had fallen and hauling it off. After meeting back at the bus for lunch, three of the guys and three of us girls split off and walked the streets, handing out little Bibles and some literature. Almost everyone was more than happy to talk to us. The one place we almost didn't stop at had lots of people in the yard and loud music, sounded like some for party. The one lady saw us walk by and came out. She informed us that they had buried a family member that morning who had passed away from drug overdose. She asked for multiple Bibles, and her opinion was that they would need them in the morning when everyone sobered up, because they were going to need to discuss some things. All around, it was a rewarding day. We met back at the bus, everyone sunburnt, and some of them very wet and muddy. The group that got the dirtiest, I think Rhoda was in. Maybe she has some more on what they did. The president of the parish, which is like a county in Louisiana, met us there at the church and thanked us for our help and prayed with us and for us. The last week that we were down there was really hot and humid, which added some excitement to the closing program on Thursday. And that pretty much concludes what I have.
Good evening, everyone. This was my first year at Bible school, so it was definitely a lot of fun, and I learned a lot. So first and foremost, the weather was amazing compared to here. It was 85 degrees and sunny, and we came back to 16 degrees and snowy. Anyway, the classes I took were Thessalonian themes, music in a biblical perspective, separated unto God, and getting along with people God's way. And my favorite class was also Thessalonian themes, taught by Jason Sensmig. Like Shelley said, a bunch of the stuff I was going to say, but we had lots of very good discussions and talked a lot about church standards and why we do some of the things we do. Some questions, for example, were why wear the plain suit, why wear coverings and not veils, why long socks in public, and why no t-shirts, and all the way to why do we wear a dark color watch band. A bunch of these we didn't come to any conclusions on, but it still led to lots of very interesting discussions. Classes were usually over by 3:35, and then we had about an hour of chorus, and then after that was volleyball. Usually about half the students played volleyball before supper and the other half after supper. And then around 8 o'clock every evening, we all met in the dining area and had activity time. Some of these activities we did were personality tests. That was very interesting. And fishbowl. I don't know if all of you know what that is, but it's too hard to explain, so you can ask me later if you want to know. And another thing we did was break into teams and build things with Play-Doh and see who could guess what we were trying to build first. That was very interesting, and the building part did not work out for me. Another thing we did was split into groups, and each group had 30 balloons and some tape, and we were supposed to see who could make the biggest tower with balloons and tape. After that, we had often was a bunch of ping pong and round town with 20 people. It was actually a lot of fun. And then after that was snack. Another thing that added a lot of drama to the first week of the term was Lindell's accident that I'm sure you've all heard about. His two sisters were there at Bible school when it happened, and they actually went home for a week during Bible school, but they came back for the last week, so they didn't have to miss out on everything. Sunday the 19th, we all went to the Red Bluffs in the afternoon. That was a lot of fun and really beautiful, actually. I think everybody would agree that all the dirty clothes and shoes that needed a good cleaning afterwards were well worth the hike and sights we saw. And that was the last Sunday we were there. The next day was Monday and the last week of our studies. And that week flew by very fast, and soon it was program evening. And besides the fact that one of the guys fainted, that went really good. And actually, I have recordings of all the songs if anybody wants any. You can talk to me afterwards. And after the program, we said all our goodbyes. And that evening, I think around 10 o'clock, the bus left, and then everybody flying left the next morning. So I guess that's about all I have to say about my first year at Bible school.
Good evening, everyone. So in the morning, we started out with rising times at 6 o'clock, and then we did morning worship and breakfast, which was like we had breakfast, and one of the guys would have devotions and a song. And then we had chapel, and we had a lot of good chapel discussions. The first one was on excuses, which I think was originated by Nelson. And some of them included, what does a conservative Mennonite churches have to offer? Do your choices, or how your choices affect your destiny? And then Brendan talked about peak state, which involves your physiology, focus, and what you tell yourself in the day as far as what your attitude is going to be at the end of the day. And then we talked about self-acceptance and self-esteem, the difference, and the ditches on either side of the road on both of them. And we talked about the equal value of all people and keeping our eyes on the goal, and also about priorities and a bunch of other interesting stuff. And then the first class that I took was Elijah and Elisha, which was from 8:30 to 9:20. And there we discussed a lot of stuff about prayer, like what is wrong with the phrase answered prayer, which implies that God doesn't answer some prayers. And he also brought out that God always listens. It doesn't matter whether we hear an answer or not. God always listens and always takes time to hear our prayers. And we studied about what made Elijah and Elisha's prayers so effective, and whether discouragement is wrong, and some principles to remember when confronting people. The main one was it must be for restoration, and we need to remember we have similar weaknesses, and we need to deal with the problem, not the person. Why is it better to teach a man to work than to give him a handout was another thing we discussed. And does the ability to do miracles prove one relationship with God? That one brought some really interesting discussion. Why don't we see more miracles today? Why shouldn't we seek to do miracles today? Which was another interesting thing we talked about, and how if we seek miracles today and try to do stuff like speaking in tongues and faith healing and stuff like that, we end up taking our focus off God and putting it on the people who are doing the miracles. And we also talked about how God calls people who are already busy and willingly filling the place there already in, and why God hates covetousness, which he views it as idolatry, which means he's not having first place in your life anymore, and why it is important to develop our spiritual vision, because if you have no vision, you have no shame, no rising generation, and no direction. God wants us to, another thing we studied was God wants us to get passionate about our duty. It was a story about the king who Elijah told him to smite the arrows on the ground, Elijah or Elisha, I forget which one. And he only did it like 3 times, and he got mad, and it's like, why didn't you do it 5 or 6 times? Because God wants us to get passionate about our duty. And another thing we talked about was prayer is not talking at God, it is talking with God. It is not writing a letter to God. It is not about me, but it is aligning myself with his will. Also, when someone gets overtaken in a fault, this was a really interesting thought to me, and really, it was good for us to remember. When someone gets overtaken in a fault, you don't know how hard they were tempted, how hard they resisted, and what you would have done in their situation. So I think to remember when we tend to quickly judge others. And one of the final things we studied about was the Christian may not demand of others what he is required to give or do. And one thing we studied about in Bible reading and prayer, which we had right before lunch, was there's the two most powerful things you can do is pray and live right. The next class was Modern Religious Voices. And most of what we studied is what is truth. Because he brought out that we can study into other religions and stuff, but the best way to tell what is false is to know the truth. And we made a list of what is truth. If you want the list later, you can ask me for it. But I'll just read a few of them. Truth stands the test of time. Truth will support itself. It does not need to be vindicated. Truth is scientifically, historically, and prophetically accurate. Truth reveals knowledge beyond the known. Truth lines up with an unadulterated conscience. Truth clears man's conscience. And truth will set you free. We studied about what is religion in theology. And we had a great argument for 2 days about whether baptism saves you or not. And in the end, I think the teacher was slightly exasperated, but we didn't come to any grand conclusions about that. But I think we all knew what we believed ourselves. And we studied about how we need to live by the whole Bible, and a lot of religions out there will take their things they believe and back them up with one or two Bible verses and then leave out the rest of the Bible. And we need to use the whole Bible to back up our beliefs. And we talked about things like speaking in tongues, faith healing, how it's actually the faith that heals the person, not necessarily the person who is speaking or the oil. Another interesting thing he brought out is that if God leaves, Satan doesn't wait to be invited. He just moves in, and he must go completely if we are to have God in our lives. Another thing he brought up is he showed us a picture of some of the people he went to Bible school with, and it was interesting to see the different church groups in it. And he asked us, what will this group look like in 10 years? And he brought up that it's our choice and no one can decide for us. Another thing we talked about was the Trinity and infant baptism and how to avoid apostasy or falling away. I also have a list of things we came up with. Somewhere have strong personal convictions and stand on them. Share your faith with others. Focus on the end goal. And know and study the Bible or truth. And one thing that really stuck out to me in this class was we like to think and we talk about heaven being eternal. But do we realize really deep down that hell is also eternal? And once a person goes there, there's no going back. One thing he also brought out was no other religions deal with the guilt problem. No other religions can take away our guilt problem and erase it. And he also, at the beginning of every class, he would have a saying for us. In the end class, he came up with a saying himself, and it's kind of hard to understand. It's, truth is the foundation of all life. Without truth, there is no moorings for anything to exist. Everything becomes relative, and thereby nothing can substantiate anything, and anything can substantiate nothing. That brought a lot of good discussion, too. And then the last class I took was Christian Family Living, which was very interesting. It was taught by Jason Sensnig. And some of the stuff we studied was what is meant by the family is a basic social unit. We all have one, and it's where we become who we are. And what our heritage is, it involves our choices and the choices of those before us. And whether we view our heritage as good or bad depends on our attitude and relationship with God. We also studied why it's important to forgive people in general, and especially our parents and for mistakes they made, because if we don't, we'll probably end up repeating them. And we also study some cultural pressures that face the family today, which he brought out some statistics there, which got really interesting. Some of them were materialism, diminishing family size, separation of age levels. And if you want a little statistics, in 1940s, the average house size was 750 square feet. In 1950s, it was 950 square feet. In the 1960s, it was 1,100 square feet. And 1970s, it was 1,350. 1980s, 1,725. 1990s, 2,095. 2008, 2,330. In 2013, 2,598 square feet. Whereas children, diminishing family size, children per woman, in the 1800s it was 7, in the 1900s it was 4, and as of 2010 it's 1 or 2. Another thing that we talked about was dating, engagement, marriage, and child training, which brought up a lot of interesting stories. And we talked about home and church and how they relate to each other. And we discussed about how my choices affect others. And he figured out that if every generation would have 7 children, or every person in a generation would have 7 children, it would be up to 5.7 million people in a generation. So your choices you made today do affect a lot of people. And another thing he brought out is our past will influence us, but it does not have to control us. And if we leave our past up to God, he can help us to make better choices if we need to. We also broke 2 records this year, which were alluded to. One was it was the hottest program, and the other was the longest bus ride back, which they missed out on. But I'm not so sure that they are sorry. The first bus kind of like malfunctioned, and so they had to bring another one out, and we ended up staying on the bus for about 24 hours, so that wasn't the best. But the poor people that were driving, I think, were more worried than we were, and they made us play games so we wouldn't get bored. But all in all, it was very worth going, and I would encourage any young person to definitely go. And that's all I have.
Well, good evening, everybody. It's definitely good to be back home after being gone for a while. My apologies if everybody thinks I'm somewhat scatterbrained, and I probably am. I took the time to just scribble down a couple things. We got home at 1 o'clock this morning, so in the past number of hours, I haven't had a whole lot of sleep, but I tried to put together a brief overview of what we did and things. So as was mentioned earlier, I believe Jerry mentioned it, we were down for second term of Orphans for Jesus. It's technically, they changed the name of it, I don't know, 2 years ago or so. It's actually Outreach for Jesus. It was because of technical terms they changed the name, but if you hear Orphans for Jesus or Outreach for Jesus, it is the same thing. There was about 50 youth, give or take. I didn't take the time to count on the group photo to see actually how many there was. I just randomly ran across it. And then there was probably about 8 couples to staff it. Various projects that we did were painting, framing, concrete, like flat work, block work, and some roofing. Places we were to, they go to an old folks home. I don't know exactly how many people are there. It's a small compound, but the stories are all 2 or 3 stories high, real sharp steps going down. I thought it would have been interesting if I'd had more time, and for the sake of you guys, to take some of my pictures off my phone. so that I could show you guys. But like I said, we just got home this morning, so I didn't really have a whole lot of time to do that. But the first day we were there, it was cold and rainy at the old folks' home. And everybody had been telling me, you know, how some of these people are just aren't very well taken care of and things. And we get there, and throughout the day, never really got real warm. And so, I don't know, maybe 30 old folks, maybe out and about. And I was like, you know, this is, you know, a little strange to me that the, you know, a dozen staff that we've seen around there couldn't keep after, you know, 30 old folks or whatever. Well, unbeknownst to me, most of them did not come out. The very next day was very sunny, and the whole courtyard was full, and it was hard to work. So there was a significant difference. Like I said, I didn't get a count on how many people were there. It is a very full facility. One thing that we certainly have to be thankful for is our culture and the way we're taken care of, especially as a church family as a whole and our immediate families. Most all of us have families that would take care of us in case of, you know, injury for life or, you know, elderly or whatever. Down there, not so much. There's the other side to look at it too. At least they're in a home and they got a place to stay. This is all volunteer help. Nobody's paid here. It's a pastor of the local church that has gotten it together. And basically, if you need a home and you're elderly or disabled, he'll find a place for you. So one of the jobs we did was to lay up another. First term had poured the pad for a ceiling on another, or a ceiling and the floor for another level. And we laid up the block walls for that building as well. I believe first term next year we'll put the roof on it. I think that's their plan anyway. Numerous other jobs was ladies rehab center. Couple different outreach programs in the area and things, numerous different stuff. I don't want to keep you here all night, so I'll keep some of the details. I guess if you want to know anything that I don't mention tonight, you'll have to come ask me later. We're also very, very thankful for the safety of one of the individuals there. His name is Travis Bronk. I don't know if any of you would know him. He's from Ohio. They were doing a fencing job, putting fence posts in, and the tractor they were using a tractor with a PTO-driven three-point auger. This individual is, somebody told me, 7 foot. I don't think quite that tall, but he is very tall. When you stand and talk to him, you are standing and looking up at him. He's definitely upper 6 foot for sure. He managed to, well, once again, being this is a volunteer project, not all the implements are possibly what we'd use here in the States. So there was not a guard on the PTO shaft. They were having issues with it. They had removed it to try and fix that. Long story short, through process of trying to use it and make do with it, he actually got his the end of his hoodie in the they had a pin in the shaft, and he got it caught on there. Anyway, wrapped him around the PTO possibly twice, possibly more. It happened so fast you're not sure. Wrapped him around a time or two and spit him out. They say he was approximately 8 feet from the tractor. And he's a very stout individual. So definitely thankful for his safety. They took him to the emergency room. All he had was a compound fracture between his elbow and his shoulder. I think it was on the left arm, I think. That's all that he had. I mean, major abrasions, major burns from his hoodie and his shirt being ripped off of him. That's the only thing that spit him out, is it did manage to shred both his hoodie and his shirt, spit him out of the PTO shaft. But yeah, like I said, fortunate to walk away with a couple bruises and brush burns and a compound fracture in his arm. They took him to the ER down there and got a pin put in it. And he was still there. He stayed for most of the rest of the term. I believe he went home 3 days early. His parents kind of wanted him home. I don't blame him. So definitely thankful for the Lord watching out for all of us as we worked, and especially for him as he went through his accident. Weather, for those that think we went down there to be in the sun, that's not the case in the location we're at. I would say in the morning it was anywhere, or overnight morning was anywhere between 35 and 40. And midday, I believe it got up to maybe 67 the one day, but basically 50 to 65, somewhere in there. It did snow twice while we were down there. There was quite a few days that it was actually warmer here than it was where we were. So we weren't down there just soaking up the sun, for those that think of going to Mexico in the sun. One thing that is incredible is, so where the base is, it's higher altitude. Most of the jobs we would travel down off of the mountain, down into the valleys, you know, per se, or down towards the coast. Most of the jobs, it would be, on average, it would be 10 degrees warmer when you got to the job than it was at, say, camp or base. Travel down there is nothing like here. We would split up into maxi vans and pickups. I believe there was 7 vans total, and we were using 3 pickups. So we'd split up into them to leave for the day's projects. Breakfast was at 7. Normally we'd leave around 8:30, something like that. Basically down there, if the road is wide enough for another vehicle, they consider it a lane. So you can have a one-lane construction zone, and you can have 4 cars wide in that. So it's nothing like traveling here. I did a little bit of driving down there. Definitely didn't volunteer for it much, because it certainly would not be something I would choose to do a whole lot of. The culture is another thing. Extremely thankful for what we have here at home, and it makes you think a lot about what we have and the blessings that we have been granted here. As far as seeing the poverty and people living in shacks, people living under bridges, people living in water drainages, you know, say coming out of the city, people landing there with their sleeping bags and things. Definitely a very, very poor culture compared to here. While we were down there, church would have been held at Shining Light Children's Home. Some of you may have heard of it, may have been there possibly. Interesting fact, when I say interesting for us, so all their services they have in Spanish. That's what most of the children they have would understand and things. So the first Sunday we were down there, it was before term actually started. We were to be down there as, you know, cooks, so we were down there a little early. So we were to the service, and all the singing would have been in Spanish, and the majority, the Sunday school teacher did his best to try to hold an English and Spanish Sunday school. But the majority of the service was Spanish, and it's just interesting to sit with like-minded believers that you cannot understand. And the amazing part was they still use the same lyrics and everything that we use as far as, you know, the Sunday songs they sing. I could sing them, I could sit and sing them in English, but I didn't know their Spanish books. They wouldn't have Sunday, actually they do have Sunday school, they would have Sunday school. They don't have near as many Sunday school classes as we have. They just break them down into little larger age group The second Sunday that we were down there, term would have been started, and they had the sermon and the Sunday school would have both been taught in Spanish and English. The preacher would preach in Spanish for a bit, and then he would preach the same thing in English, and preach more in Spanish and preach the same thing in English. So for those of you that preach here at home, it's something to, I'm sure, get used to as far as being down there and trying to convert back and forth. The two guys that preached while we were down there were very good at, you know, fluctuating back and forth. So that was interesting. Obviously, crossing the border. For the majority of the people, like all the youth coming down and things, it's easier to walk across. They do less checking. You basically just run your suitcases through the machines, and they ask you some questions and whatever. So that was done by two vans on the California side. Most everybody flew into San Diego. So there would be two vans and two drivers bringing them from San Diego to the parking lot at the border. They would then unload, walk through the border, and there's two vans on the Mexico side waiting to pick them up, transport them to base. I don't know exactly how far base was from the border. I would say probably 15 minutes, maybe, south of the border. It's a 30-minute drive from the border crossing to where the base is. Which would have been the bay. I don't know, for any of you that have been to Mexico or possibly looked at a map or anything, the base is in Tecate, and most of the work we did was in Tijuana. So there's a bit of a drive, an hour to an hour and a half, depending on the traffic, which can vary greatly down there. Some mornings you can breeze right through the main section of town. The next morning, considerably different, a lot of backup traffic and things. Yeah, like I said before, just mainly amazes or brings you to the realization of what all we have here as far as family and friends and the blessings that the Lord has granted us with here at home, and seeing the poverty down there. So I did not get to go along and help when they passed out tracts. They put bundles together of beans and rice and a little bit of candy and tracts, and they go about the, we call them shack towns, or they call them shack towns. There's whole, along some of the main roads, there's whole, I'm going to say the one spot, it's probably about a mile worth of just shacks put together with whatever you can find. Stacking up tires and using a tarp, cardboard, pallets, whatever they can lay their hands on and build a shack with. Just a complete unrealistic life for what we know of here. So they went into two of the shack towns to hand that stuff out. Like I said, I wasn't able to go with. There was a couple of random projects on the jobs that needed finished up, so I rode with one of the guys in charge and helped him for that day to get some of the jobs wrapped up so that we could head home. But yeah, just for anybody that gets the chance to go, or even doesn't even have to be Mexico, any of the other projects, Guatemala or wherever, Honduras, definitely encourage you to go and see what you actually have here at home. Brings you to a whole new realization. Also, with all the vans, and they're also, Orphans for Jesus is actually building their own facility. Currently, that's one of the jobs that we were working on as well, building some like mini houses or whatever for the compound. They bought a piece of land not far from the church down there, the Shining Light, and they're actually building their own compound. Currently, they rent a campground that has cabins. They would rent that, and that's where everybody stays. That's where we just stayed and things. They hope by next year to be using their own facility. So obviously with all the van maintenance and all the tools to be used and, yeah, everything takes money. None of them told me to tell you this, but certainly if you, feel the need to give to a good cause, I can certainly find a phone number. I wanted to actually get one tonight to read off for you if you wanted it, but if you would like to donate, let me know, and I'll get you a phone number.